Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Welcome to this week's episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. I am your host, Dr. Jake Porter. One of the questions I get asked most by individuals and couples who are trying to wade through the aftermath of discovering sex addiction or experiencing betrayal trauma is this: what about the kids? Well, sex addiction and betrayal doesn't have to take your parenting to new lows. In fact, by focusing on your core values, you can realign your efforts to breathe new life into your parenting. People wonder what to tell the children and how to become a family in recovery. It is possible to achieve peak parenting by recognizing your weak spots and using tools to combat the things that are pulling you into defeat. Today, you're going to get to listen in on this discussion between two professionals on how to navigate the road of recovery while reaching new, more meaningful connections with your children. Believe it or not, your family relationships can blossom and flourish during this time. You're going to get to listen in on an interview that was done during part of this year's Choose Connection Summit. The interview is conducted by Dr. Wendell Gill, who's a team member here at Daring Ventures with me. Wendell is a ITAP certified pastoral sex addiction professional. He is a recovery coach. He's an expert in intelligence, emotional intelligence, and all things empathy. He does amazing work with men in recovery and couples. And he's interviewing Stacy Sadler. Stacy is a licensed professional counselor supervisor. She's an EMDR trained therapist, and she's also chief clinical officer here at Daring Ventures on my team. She is credentialed with APSATS, and she helps partners of sex addicts who are suffering from betrayal trauma. She does lots of things. She's super involved, speaks all over the country. She also just recently co-authored Understanding and Loving Your Child as a Single Parent with Steve Arterburn. And I'm especially excited to bring this interview with her to you because she is one of the newest multidimensional partner trauma model trainers with APSATS. The multidimensional partner trauma model is APSATS' model for how to treat those who have experienced betrayal trauma. And if you work in this field and you have never taken that training, I cannot encourage you enough to do so. And I want to let you know that registration for the next offering is open now. That will be on November 14th through 17th, live via Zoom. The information about that is at APSATS.org. And APSATS is also putting on a number of other events between now and then that may interest you. September 1st, Kim Hansen-Petroni is doing a one-hour workshop, The Partner's Role in Couples Work. September 28th and 29th, Jessica Edens, a board member with APSATS, is putting on her training, Betrayed Families, Support for Children and Families. In October, the 20th through the 22nd, Dan Drake and Janice Cottle will be offering once again their disclosure guide training, Restoring Truth. And then the last one I want to mention is November 1st through 3rd, the APSATS annual conference, which will be live online. All the information, all the details, how to sign up for all of these events, you can find at APSATS, that's APSATS.org. All right. I'm excited to let you listen in on this conversation. You're going to learn a lot if you are wondering about how to focus on your parenting and excel in parenting in the middle of this really, really hard and difficult time. So without further ado, listen in as Dr. Wendell Gill interviews Stacy Sadler. Okay.
we're delighted to have with us today our Chief Clinical Officer at Daring Ventures, Stacy Sadler. Hello, Stacy.
Hi, Wendell. So glad to be here.
Well, we're grateful that Stacy is here with us. She is a licensed professional counselor. She's credentialed with APSATS, and she loves helping partners who suffered from betrayal trauma and has helped many, many in their journey. She also is a group facilitator for New Life Ministries at their workshop and as a keynote speaker for the Restore workshop, also serves on the board of New Life Ministries. And one of Stacy's recent achievements is co-authoring with Steve Arterburn, the book, Understanding and Loving Your Child as a Single Parent. And so some of what Stacy will share today, hopefully will be from her book. Stacy, do you have a copy of that book with you?
Oh, yes. Oh, you know it. Yes. Pretty excited about this.
Understanding and Loving Your Child as a Single Parent.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Well, so talk to us a little bit about the book first. What was it like to write a book like that? And what was your connection to doing that kind of work, perhaps? And then I'll have a bunch of other questions I want to ask you.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, it was challenging, my first book, but a beautiful opportunity given to me by New Life Ministries. And it was born out of my own experience of being divorced. And my kids were not young when I was divorced, but they were in those tween to high school years, and still was a challenge parenting alone. Of course, I think I parented quite a bit alone before that, but then I was officially a single parent after that. So basically it was just born out of my own experience. And then I drew a lot on what clients, I heard day in and day out from clients, true heroes in the single parenting journey who, mostly betrayed partners who did not want their marriages to end, but did, and found themselves as single parents. And what I found through that journey was so many beautiful stories of what God had done in their lives to turn around a really tragic situation into some victorious situations. So there's a lot of hope in the book.
Good, good. So this is not just learning about what not to do. It's also learning some things to do, some positive
Absolutely.
Things. Wow.
Both ways.
And I can really relate to that because there is so much to learn in this work just from others. Right. I think the richness of what I learned from clients is just phenomenal. And yeah, thank you for sharing that piece. So one question that comes up in this process, and as you were just sharing your own experience of having gone through what you went through, what do you tell the kids? And maybe when do you tell them? I mean, that's a pretty big question. Probably spend all day talking about that. But what exactly should you tell the kids?
Well, first of all, what I want to say is this is not just a talk for single parenting. This is a talk for all parents. And that's really important to say up front before people tune out, because really what's in my book is about good parenting, period. Mm-hmm. But when dysfunction hits your family and you become in recovery, you have some choices to make as a parent. First of all, you're so blindsided with the reality of when you come out of denial and you come into recovery, you have some choices to make as a parent. And some of those is, hey, this has affected your kids. And how are you going to talk to them about it? And I think and always when we're at doing the Restore workshop and we do Q&A, this is the first question everybody asks. What do I tell my kids? What do I tell my kids? And it depends on their age, first of all. But if your kids are young, it's going to be first of all, we want to just be authentic. We just want to be as authentic as we can be, but your five-year-old does not need to know about sex addiction, right? But what they do need to know, they're intuitive and they already know something ain't right. Mm-hmm. Mommy and daddy are sleeping in separate bedrooms. Mommy and daddy don't speak. Maybe they don't. Worse off, don't you think, Wendell, would be if they don't know, they think it's normal that a family functions like this. Mm-hmm. So I always think in the beginning, it's really good if the betrayer, the one that's done the betraying, can take ownership to say to the children, I hurt mommy. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell mommy the truth. is that's a principle we're teaching our kids to be truthful, that truth leads to trust. Trust leads to freedom and connection, all those things. So I think it's a really good lesson to start teaching really early on that we need to be truthful in what we do, and that it's okay if you're not truthful, because we all lie, right? We've all lied. And so this is a life lesson that our kids have to learn, is to be truthful. So I think one of the biggest things, I put my parents on a pedestal and I thought they were perfect. I didn't know that they had made some mistakes. I mean, I did later on in life, but it normalizes our own nature to the fact that we're not perfect. And when we take ourselves off that pedestal as a parent, it makes it easier for us to talk, to be talked to. Our kids can come to us when we're authentic and honest. I think as, would you have something
to say? I was going to say, you know, from when you say that, you know, the betrayer takes it upon themselves, and that is part of the amends, right? That's part of ownership. One of the big obstacles, as you know, in working with addicts also is the shame factor. And many addicts will say, well, you know, I don't know what to say or how to say it. And that's going to be different depending on the age. And that's something that has to be clarified in the discussions with one's partner. Yeah. And I love the way you said, you know, if you've got a 5 or 6 year old, then it's more like, hey, I hurt mom and I didn't tell her the truth. And that's what's going on. So I'm working and we're going to work to make things better, something like that. And so, because a lot of the addicts I work with, that shame factor is like, you know, the kids don't need to know what they need to know. And they think, well, I got to give to them these specifics and a disclosure like I did for her. And the answer is no, you don't have to.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing about that is, you know, is that like for me, and this is just me, I was in a process of my own recovery. So I made amends to my kids too. As I went through the process. Now, that didn't happen in the beginning, but it happened as I matured in recovery. And I sat them down and did my own 9th step saying, hey, these are the things that happened. There are times I kicked the dog, which was you. And I was really mad at him, but you were the easy target. So I, you know, tried to get you to be perfect. And I made amends for those. And of course, they looked at me like, what are you talking about, Mom? Now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, years later, they're like, oh, I get that. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm being willing to give living amends as they start raising their families and saying, oh, okay, that affected me, to just to continually say, yeah, you know, I taught you how to be pretty codependent. I taught you how to, you know, be a pleaser, whatever it is. I think it's important for me to take ownership for my own journey as well. But as they start getting older, they can start learning a little bit more about the betrayal. And I think that we have to educate our kids early about pornography, because it is everywhere. And I don't know what statistics you know, Wendell, but for me, I think the average age that kids see it is like 7 or 8. It's really early.
It is. And that is a tragic a result of a culture that obviously that's a whole other segment of discussion. Right. Culture that is really gone to a horrible place with its craze around its misunderstanding, in my opinion, about sex and sexuality and so forth. But
well, that is so true. And what that sets up for our kids is, as we're learning what healthy sexuality looks like, mm-hmm. we also have to teach them what it looks like. So say the first 10 years of their life, it was jacked up because we were a family that was dysfunctional. Right. It can be repaired. Mm-hmm. It can be repaired. And that's the hope in all this, reaching new heights, is this can be repaired. You know, the motivation for wanting to do different now is changing a generational pattern. I just got my copy of Ken Adams' new book, The Light in the Dark.
Yeah.
The Light in the Dark by Ken Adams. And it's one of the first books written about the hidden legacy of adult children of sex addicts. And I just realized legacy is in the title. Didn't notice that before, but that's one of my core values, is legacy. Lost my mom this year at 99 years old. But my parents were both people in recovery. And so one of my values is carrying that legacy mm-hmm. to my children. And one of the quotes in the front of this book from Terry Real says, family dysfunction rolls down from generation to generation like a fire in the woods, taking down everything in its path until one person in one generation has the courage to turn and face the flames. That person brings peace to their ancestors and spares the children that follow.
That's encouraging to hear, Stacy, as I know Cindy and I, our desire is to spend a lot of time with our children as they led us. And I even got to spend time with my 35-year-old son over the weekend where we did have some candid conversations that I cannot imagine had I not been in recovery and been learning the things I've been learning the last 10, 15 years of my life, I would not have been able to have those conversations, right? So there is light in the darkness, no doubt about it.
And that's the hope, is that it changes. You know, obviously my dad was an alcoholic and we were AA Al-Anon family, and I didn't completely escape the dysfunction. I repeated some of it by marrying somebody like that, which is really common, but we're working to change as generations go on. A funny story is, couldn't wait to, you know, I wrote my son a foreword. He's in the foreword of my book, and I wrote him a little thing as I did my daughter in the front, little inscription. And so gave it to my daughter-in-law and son, and she calls me in FaceTime and she says, "I hate to tell you this, but the dog ate the book." So my dog might not have accepted the book. And the truth is, you know, they may not. You and I were talking before we started about our own journey, Wendell. Yes. And some kids may not be ready to digest this as readily. And I'm not sure my kids love that I'm out telling my story in this public forum, but I meet them where they're at in their journey. When they're ready, they're ready. If they're not, I accept them right where they're at. And it's important that we validate our kids and accept them right where they're at. But that doesn't mean that we aren't authentic and speak our own truth in the process.
We talk for a minute. This is one of the questions on our list, but you brought something up that might be worth talking about here, I think. We meet them where they are. Even if where they are might be painful for us. Can you talk about that for a moment? Because sometimes where they are, it's like, I don't want to talk to them. You know, they're doing this. They're saying these things about me, or they have this attitude toward me.
Yeah.
And this meeting someone where they are sounds easy until where they are is a place that's really painful for me. And they happen to be my children or the children of my new marriage, my stepchildren. Yes. What about that?
Yes. Well, that's probably one of my favorite chapters in my book on holding space for your kids. And I say, what the heck is holding space anyway? It is this beautiful space where anything is acceptable, of course, not abuse, but right, where any emotion that comes up, it's okay. But guess what you have to do for yourself? You have to feel okay, forgiven, acceptable. You have to do your own work before you can sit in that kind of space with your kids, because what we want to do is react. And if you're struggling with that, and the example I use in my book is that when my daughter told me she was going to dye her hair blue, and I'm thinking inside, my beautiful, brown haired little girl is going to dye her hair blue. And I'm like, really? Tell me about that. You know? And what I learned about my daughter while holding space for her is that she wants to be an individual. She wants to be known for who she is. She does not want to comply. That's really important to her, the kind of person she is. And guess what happened? It was beautiful blue and green and purple and orange, and it's been all those colors, and she's a cute as a button with all those colors. And so what's maintained is that our relationship has been close regardless, and I've accepted her. We all want to be accepted no matter who we really are, and that's the core of it. And children of especially sex addiction believe, if you really knew my story, you wouldn't accept me. I mean, that's what sex addicts believe. Well, it's also what we're finding children of sex addicts believe. There's shame. But if you can accept me in that, and maybe it's not hair color, maybe it's something way deeper. Maybe it's lifestyle change. And that has happened to me. And I've had to accept my daughter with choices and son with choices that they've made that aren't necessarily my value system. But the truth is I love the heck out of them for who they truly are. If you struggle with that, I have a little help for that. It's called Victory Through Validation, and it's on my website, stacysadler.com, S-T-A-C-E-Y, sadler.com, and it's called Victory Through Validation. And it's an 8-day free e-course that shows how to listen. And one of the very first things we do is we start defending. And the reason we start defending is because we're not checking with what's coming up in us. Like that moment I went,
we feel it's an attack and maybe a rejection of who we are and our values, right?
Yes. Yes. A reflection or, you know, our intimate relationship status is somehow threatened. That's what we want to do. But when we can stop and get that in check, and that's a big step. A lot of people go to counseling just for that, right? Then we can put that aside and be able to listen and be able to hold space and to validate. Well, it makes sense that you'd feel that way. And so I think that is hugely, hugely important and something not done. In fact, there's a lot of mistakes being made with kids out there.
Well, on the one hand, there's a sense of, you know, you're going to get your hair dyed blue over my dead body attitude. Or the attitude of, oh, good, I've dyed my hair green, you know?
Yeah.
So where there's not a sense of stability from the parent. You see, I feel that if the parent cannot show that they're stable within themselves, that they don't have a secure sense of identity, then the child is really out there always being insecure, right? Because they're never able to see what is the nature of a secure sense of identity.
That's right. That's right.
That's what comes up for me in this conversation because, you know, parents says, well, okay, I'll go get my hair dyed green. Kids like, well, what does that mean? You know, mama wants to be my best friend. I don't want her to be my best friend, you know, or whatever. And it can get real confusing fast, right? Versus, tell me about that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not changing, but if that's what you want, that's okay. You know, let's stay in a relationship, right? Something like that.
Right, right, right. And that's that whole stable sense of self. We've got to be the secure base they come back to. The good thing is we can learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. so much redemption. You know, we can learn to change. And that's why your own recovery is so mm-hmm. important mm-hmm. that yeah. you are becoming that secure person. You know, I can't count the times, Wendell, people kind of in the end, I don't want to say the end of counseling, but as time progresses in counseling, a couple of years in, they look at me and some of them it's sooner than later. And they say, I am so thankful that this thing happened to me.
Wow. Oh yeah. I know that's weird to say that. Yes. I've heard it even from addicts.
Absolutely. And I get chills and I get teary eyed because that's the giving back part, the 12th step. It's that thing of, I want to give back. I want to help someone else because I became a better person through it. How many of us become a better person by just living the life of Riley?
Yeah, Not a lot of us. We don't really. And the thing is, when I have a client who says to me, look, I'm glad I got caught. Yeah. I would never know what I know now. And that tells me that recovery is really an act of faith, you know, without, you know, getting into religious structures here, but the idea that it can be better, even though I've not experienced it.
Yeah.
Right. Even though people are telling me their life got better. I haven't seen it yet. Right. And so I'm struggling with this addiction. I have to believe that it can be done. And that's really an act of faith. And that's the first step, right?
It is.
I can't do it. And I need to believe that there's somebody, a higher power, who's going to enable me and certainly a lot of other people in that construct through accountability groups that are going to help that person make it, right? And they begin to see, I can do this, right? I can.
One step at a time.
That's exactly.
Because the vision, if you told me my life was going to look like this
mm-hmm.
10 years ago, I would have said, what? Right. No way. But it's one little change on top of one little change on top of one little change. And then all of a sudden you go, wow, I'm really becoming the person I want to be. Mm-hmm.
So this question about how ultimately it will affect the children depends a lot on what certainly depends on how they internalize things as they grow and embrace things, but it depends a lot on how we as parents going through this are settling in our own sense of identity in terms of our secure selves, our becoming a secure base. What have you seen in terms of how it impacts children ultimately?
Well, it depends. Let me talk for a minute about what's not being done right.
Okay.
Or the biggest mistakes I see that come out of addicted families. Number one is we often use the children as surrogate spouses. And that hurts my heart to say it, but it happens. Because the dysfunction in a world of lying and deceit is so crazy making that sometimes we can go to these kids who are needy and need us and really turn it around where we need them for stability, where we're telling them daddy did this, mommy did this, you know, things like that, and getting a sense of comfort from our kids. Well, that's backwards. That's backwards. We should let our children be children. And their job description is play, repeat, play, go to school, repeat. You know, it's really easy. It shouldn't be a task. They shouldn't have to carry your load.
So if a parent is seeking validation from their children.
That's right. That's right. Or comfort. Or even, you know, just being lonely in recovery, you know? Oh, okay, my kids. So sometimes we get our identity through our kids, being a parent to our kids. That can't be the only thing that is our identity is based upon. Or else the kids start feeling the pressure of it. You know, I've got to perform for mom. So we get little performance beings running around out there because they feel like they know, they get a sense of mom and dad's stability. Mom or dad's stability comes from who I am. You know, if I'm the greatest football player, then they will feel okay. And that's how we get family roles. We start falling into family roles of, you know, performance and hero children and things like that. So we don't want to do that. Caveat, if you've done that, give yourself grace. Forgive yourselves. And then learn how not to do that. One of the biggest reasons that happens is because we don't have support for ourselves. So many people want to stay inside a family system and keep all the secrets inside the family system instead of opening that door to truth telling to other healthy adults in recovery.
And that's where you're going to start changing the legacy, right?
100%. So, you know, one of the problems with sex addiction is shame and secrets. And Brene Brown always says that shame hides in silence, secrecy, and judgment. Okay. So when we start telling our story, these ladies at Restore come from across the nation to tell their story. Sometimes they've never uttered the words of what happened. And they're carrying their husband's shame. And what happens when they're in isolation is we start making up stories in our heads. We're carrying shame without realizing it. Okay. And so when we start telling our story to other people that get it, or we start telling it for our children, mom and dad go to meetings every week so that we can get better. We can become better people and better parents. Wow. Kids are like, oh, okay. So it's okay for me to tell my story. It's okay for me to tell my truth. Once we start modeling that for them, they can become more stable when they see that they don't have to be that stability for us or that comfort for us. Talking about our feelings, when we start normalizing it, I always tell people, go home and put a feelings chart on your refrigerator with little smiley faces for the kids. And when y'all are becoming a family in recovery, that's the whole concept is this, we are recovering together. You know, I love it when I hear that, I do mean that. My kids are in counseling, we're in counseling. So what are we learning? Well, we're learning to talk about our feelings. We're learning to express ourselves. It's okay to be angry in our household. There's rules surrounding anger. We can't hurt each other in our anger, but we can certainly express it. And here's how we do healthy. And and becoming a family that discusses things like this and talks about things like this. I've seen some of the most beautiful stories come out of families in recovery. Mm-hmm.
So this casting in a person's mind, what I have found working with addicts and couples, that this the way that you cast the idea of recovery in your mind mm-hmm. has a lot to do with how you do in recovery. And I'm saying that because you said two things there a moment ago, families in recovery and families seeking to be healthy. It's very two different ways of saying it.
So true.
We're saying the same thing. And the reason I say it that way is because I do think that still in our culture, there's this negative connotation that goes along with we're in recovery, we're family in recovery, which, you know, not ashamed to say it.
Right.
For many people, the idea is that maybe we have become so enculturated with ideas from our from this negative legacy, right, that we so don't even know what healthy is. We call it recovery when the reality is we're really just wanting to be a healthy family.
That's right.
So let's learn the healthy way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We happen to call that recovery. But that's right. What a healthy family looks like. Recovery, I think maybe the way is the way we get there.
It is. And it's the idea, like, you know, a lot of addicts I talk about have been living in addiction since, you know, very early in life. I'll ask them, well, what are you trying to recover? You know, what exactly are you, you know, and maybe the reality is I'm really moving to something totally new and healthy that I've never known.
It's so true. It's so true. It's uncharted territory.
Uncharted territory.
And even saying to our kids, we're not sure what that looks like, but we're with some people that are really helping us figure that out. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna all talk about what that looks like and how it feels for y'all. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a difference between saying we don't know what the heck is going on and we don't have any help to try to get there, and hey, we're learning together. Because there's a sense of stability that comes when they're confident, parents are confident about learning together. Now, mm-hmm. that's a beautiful idea. But what about the parents that don't get along? What about the betrayed partner who doesn't trust the betrayer, the addict that may be still lying? What do we do then?
Right, right. Well, I mean, I think the first step, stability, right? So,
right.
And yeah.
And I always tell them, you know, you can control, of course, I might or might not have gone into recovery for control issues, but, you know, my own first, second, and third step, you know, I can't. Oh my gosh, I don't want to lay down that I can't. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to hold this family together. I can do it. I can do it. I don't want to surrender and say that I can't, but I have to, because the way in which I'm doing it is not in the way in which my higher power wants me to do it. So when I can surrender and say, I let it go, God, like I let it go. God is my higher power. When I say I surrender, and man, that word, it's a hard word to say, but it also brings so much peace. Cause when I say it's about like letting it all go and then trusting, like you said, it's an act of faith, walking forward in faith. And when I can let it go, I can say, okay, I trust you to move me forward. So I can also say to my kids, you know, I can change what I can change. I couldn't change the other half of the street. And that was, I had to grieve that. I had to grieve that my partner did not want to work the same kind of recovery program or be a family in recovery, or that there wasn't any relational recovery. And I really had to grieve that. And you know what? A temptation for there to be, and I could really sit here and, you know, ponder my own recovery, but divided loyalties, you know, there's speaking my truth, and I chose to speak truth to my children. Mm-hmm. Did it cause some divided loyalties? There were some divided loyalties when choices were made on the other end. Mm-hmm. I hope that I maintained my integrity by not saying your dad's a horrible person. You know, and causing them to have to choose. Mm-hmm. I know there was dysfunction in that area because they didn't know what to do with that. But I, at the end of the day, what I did know how to do was do my own recovery, speak my own truth so that I could be a stable force, mm-hmm. even if the other part couldn't. So
that brings up the question about many betrayed partners who are going through this, who fear ending up being a single parent. And, you know, what do they do as a single parent if they get to that place? You said something at the beginning of the interview indicating, you know, maybe you were doing single parenting all along anyway, in many ways, right? Because of the lack of involvement or dedication or surrender from the other party. And this is difficult. I know it's a couple-centered practice where we want and get to see many, many couples go through this and stay together, that there are times when they're not able to. Mm-hmm. So what are the implications for parenting around that? So maybe some of the things you addressed in the book that may apply to both single parenting and to dual parenting.
Well, and I think that one of the things is community. When you're a single parent, you've got to have community. You've mm-hmm. got to be willing to ask for help and receive help. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if you got five kids to get to different places, and you're one person, you're not a team anymore, or not two people at least, asking for help and being okay with asking for help, you know, which is tough. Mm-hmm. You know, I need help, or maybe it's financial help. Yeah. I can't hack counseling. Church, can you help? You know, being able to ask for and receive help is huge. And then also I say, you know, it takes a village. It takes a village to raise these kids. Maybe if you're a single mama and there is no male influence, good, positive male influence, maybe you pray for and create or work to create the opposite sex parent, good influence with mm-hmm. other people in your life. Mm-hmm. You bring them around church people, youth leaders, other strong persons of the opposite sex that can talk to them about the things that you just don't have experience in, you know, but some of that is advocating for your children and you being that person that says, I see that this is missing. I'm going to do what I can do to try to create this in my children. One thing. Another thing is, and I just can't stress it enough, is getting support for yourself.
Yeah.
Making sure that you have adequate support, a group, being with other single partners, parents, whatever, that help you not feel so alone. There's loneliness and isolation and shame in being single. I know for me, I felt like I had a scarlet letter D on me when I go to church. I was my first few months at church. People would say, you know, what's going on with you? And I'd say, I'm divorced. Well, it was an unwanted divorce. I mean, I had to give them that caveat because I was so filled with shame because I didn't want them judging me. And I remember that awkward period of time where I was so fearful of that, like what you talked about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wendell, I always have every partner make a plan B. Mm-hmm. And I asked God once, I said, am I leading too many people to divorce? Because I always talk about the alternative. Because mm-hmm. what I find is it keeps people from being, especially women, from being empowered to set boundaries when they're fearful of this thing happening over here. Well, when we can talk about the hypothetical thing happening over here, I have them look at their finances, talk to an attorney, get all of their ducks in a row. All of a sudden, they're not scared of that anymore. And now they can be empowered in their marriage to say, you know what? I need you to do this, 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 and this. And this is what I need for my safety. And they are a family now in recovery. And they set the bar high and the guy goes, okay, I want to keep my family. But how many people are stuck because of fear? But guess what? Now you got plan B just in case. Mm-hmm. But it's also a very empowering thing. We all should know what bank accounts we have, what's in the 401k, what our rights are to child support, especially in this weighty territory where, mm-hmm. you know, we don't ever know the outcome. We want to be able to be okay whether our spouse stays sober or not.
Mm-hmm. What comes up for me as you share that is really the difference between enslavement or feeling like I have to be here versus I'm choosing to be here.
Oh, 100%.
And if I'm going to choose to be here, here are the conditions by which I can be here. Those are the boundaries, right? These are, and as you know, having worked with many, many partners, there are different types of boundaries. They're not all equal, you know.
Right.
You know, keeping up, you know, the house might not be as important. Is not as important as you're not going to go act out, right? But the point is learning to develop that voice with a sense of I'm doing this because I want a healthy marriage, not because I'm stuck. And that is a very difficult mind transition to make for many, isn't it?
That's night and day difference. Mm-hmm. It's, you know what? It's the difference of being a victim. Mm-hmm. And taking responsibility for your life. Because I did the martyr card for a lot of years. And it's not very attractive.
Wow. That's huge. That's huge. So
when I realized I had choices for my life. Mm-hmm. And then I could live in my values once I knew that I had choices for my life. But I would always say, and then it became very apparent to me. And I'm going to say it again, this is my line, but it's true, is that there's not going to be this I'm with stupid t-shirt on when I'm in heaven.
Yeah.
I've got to account for me,
right,
and what I'm doing. And believe it or not, Wendell, that was a light bulb for me.
Mm.
It was a huge light bulb to change my thinking to I've got to take responsibility for my life. What is it that I can do, what I want, what I need? Mm-hmm. And that's everything right there.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things is, you know, my primary clients are addicts and me helping them to restore their marriage after they've betrayed their partner. And so one of the things that there's a number of things I tell them, but one of the primary things is you're doing this because you're choosing based on your values. Mm-hmm. If you're choosing to do this because it's just another way of controlling, getting her to be nice to you, basically. I'm gonna be in recovery and I'm gonna do all these things so she will be nice to me.
Yeah.
That's really the same approach that you were using before. It might be a cleaner approach, but it's the same motivation. And the motivation is manipulation for me to get validation. I'm gonna manipulate to get validation, right? Versus, hey, I'm doing this because this is who I'm choosing to be. I'm choosing to be a man of integrity. Yes, I hope and pray that a byproduct and benefit of that is she responds to that, but she gets to choose, right? She gets to choose how she's going to respond to my integrity and my consistency of character. So, so then you have two people then that are in the relationship because they're choosing to be in based on their values, not because they feel that the other has leverage or power over them.
And can you imagine the family with two of those people at the helm? Yeah. I didn't say anything about perfectionism. We said they're directed toward reaching their own values and their own living in integrity to their own values and learning as they go.
Yes.
And the possibilities for that is huge. We don't live anymore, and I don't know that we ever did, in a world where appearances are what's important and keeping up, you know, with this and that. It's about authenticity, openness, and we want our kids to be able to be heard, be understood, and develop their own voice so they don't repeat the cycles. Because quite honestly, some of the cycles that got us into this were because we couldn't talk, because we felt shame, because we couldn't be authentic, because we had to keep secrets, because we didn't have our own identity or had that modeled for us. So we want to be able to raise a family that now has these skills, and we can equip them day by day by day as we walk our own path in recovery.
Yeah. Wow. So I got a couple of quick questions, sort of. I know we're kind of nearing a time here, but I got two that are coming up for me. One is around what would you say most directly to a partner who is now single after going through betrayal and they've got grade school children? What would you, a a few things you would say to them, and then I want to ask you something about your book.
Well, I would say start building their own sense of self. Because if you're that is the most secure you can possibly come is grieve. Because if you're not grieving, you're pushing it down and it's going to come out sideways. I promise you, it's going to come out sideways. And start creating a life for yourself. You know, I one of my chapters was I really dreamed that I was losing the beach. I believed I was losing the beach in the divorce, you know, and I was walking down the beach with my friends, crying salty tears, walking on a salty beach, you know, thinking I've lost the beach in the divorce because there were so many memories wrapped up in my previous marriage. But trauma lies, grief lies. Okay. The truth is, look behind me, I got crabs and all this stuff. And I'm sitting here at the beach, living the life that I want to live because I told myself, if this is what makes you happy, then go do it. And I felt empowered not to rely on someone else to give it to me, but to create it for myself. And so I started taking trips and I said, oh, I get to decide where we go, how we go, what we pay, what we don't pay. And I walked into that empowered place to decide for myself what I could do. What seemed like all inconceivable to me was now available to me if I could walk past fear and walk into my new life. Mm-hmm. So the world's your oyster. And I say, take it, figure out what you want to do, dream a little bit. So many people don't dream about what they want to do and who they want to be. It's never, ever, ever too late. So get the help you need to get there so that you can create a life for your kids. Not that's limited. Oh, we're this poor single family, but hey, we're a team and we can make it. To have the team approach, have those kids help you with chores, help you with those things, but then also celebrate with them. Create a life where together we're going to do this and they feel empowered. But if you're the captain of that ship, you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So I'm taking some notes because I want some takeaways. Okay. But the other thing I wanted to ask you too about the book. What do you think is for you the primary thing you learned in the process of writing the book that you would say I learned this, and I know there's probably many, many things, okay, but I learned this, and this would be for me one of the main things I want to share with parents who are going through this and trying to parent their children well.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think I learned, as complex as the subject is, that it's really pretty simple. Mm-hmm. You're taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. You're getting help for yourself. Mm-hmm. You're teaching that to your children. Mm-hmm. And you're leaving forth a legacy. It's not rocket science. And then the biggest word is grace. Mm-hmm. Give yourself grace if you've made a mistake, and then dig in and ask for help if it's not working. Mm-hmm. Like, don't stay isolated. That's my big thing. And that's fairly simple. Mm-hmm. But what does it say about the program, Wendell, about
it's
giving
simple, yourself, but it ain't easy.
giving yourself over to the concept of the program, the simple right. program. I mean, AA is a simple program. SAA is a single, it's right. a simple program. There's just 12 steps. And it really boils down to the top three. I can't, he can, I think I'll let him. You know, those are the first three steps. And being, and surrender. I find myself surrendering every single day and maybe several times a day. And I probably should do it more often because I want to get my will in there. So being, you know, there's many who've gone before us, and there's so many iterations of trauma and attachment that are just fantastic, but it's really pretty simple, is surrendering to a different kind of healthy living, and doing it daily and renewing yourself in that daily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a sense, and I'm so grateful, and I know our time is, I'm going to raise another question that we probably won't have time to talk about, but I'm just going to leave it out there. There is an amazing thing about self-care that because you've mentioned that a few times here, how critical it is. And then caring for others. In this case, your self-care for a parent, a single parent, or for both parents in this process of recovery, and how that self-care translates to caring well for your children. It's like, how does that, because for in many people's mind, it's quite paradoxical. How does caring for myself translate into caring for others?
Well, if I'm full, mm-hmm. Wendell, I can give out of overflow.
Okay.
And I used to put everybody ahead of me, and I can't believe I didn't talk about it. That chapter is called putting on the oxygen mask for yourself, but right. It means little things, getting a haircut, getting your fingernails done. It means taking a breather, going to see a movie, depending on the age of your kids and your financial, mm-hmm. Maybe it's taking a hot bath. Mm-hmm. It's so many things to rekindle you to your sign right behind you to be still and know. But if you're a single parent, sometimes you don't take the time to be still and know. And so you're running in a very hypervigilant manner. So self-care is huge. And so many of us have irrational beliefs about that, like it's selfish or we don't have time or we can't do it. But it, when you are full, when your tank is full, you can give back to those kids, and you need a full tank to raise kids on your own or to raise kids in recovery. And recovery takes time. Even if you're in a stable family, recovery takes time. We got people in therapy. We're going to meetings. We've got all this stuff. Sometimes some things have to come off the plate. Sometimes we can't do all the sports we want to do. Sometimes we've got to say, hey, we got to say no to some of the things that are being asked of us. We can't be PTA president anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or do this or do that.
When I ask guys to show me a recovery plan, invariably they will leave off self-care. And then I'll say a recovery plan is not a plan if it's not on the calendar. So it has to be on the calendar. And on the calendar needs to be a place where you're actually doing self-care, and it needs to be identified as exactly what it is. And I think that applies to certainly the betrayed partner. When am I doing something with me, for me, because it's going to make me feel well? It's going to
yes.
make me feel full. That's so good. Hold your book up again, would you? I want to make sure everybody gets to see it. Understanding and Loving Your Child as a Single Parent. And certainly this is not just for single parents, but it's certainly focused in that area, right, Stacy? But
yep. And you can get
tools there that's going to help anyone.
Anyone, honestly. And you can get it on Amazon, very easy to get. And I think it's just a practical guide for parents.
Stacy, I've really enjoyed this. I love working with you as a colleague, and I look forward to more learning and growing in the future. Thank you.
Agreed, Wendell. Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. If you value the content we've shared today, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. For more resources, visit APSATS.org. That's APSATS.org.